Wonderful. How lovely to talk to you. I'm so excited. I'm talking to Jessica Levin Siegel. And please tell me if I got that wrong.
You're perfect.
Yay! She's the owner of Sing Creative Consulting, which is such a great name, which is a boutique PR and marketing firm that helps nonprofits, small businesses, and creatives hone their story so they can amplify their impact. She's also a writer and a communication specialist. She's got experience spanning the newspaper and magazine industry, the nonprofit sector, and she's a published author of children's books. And she created her own nonprofit. I've got so many questions for you, Jessica. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm very excited to be here.
I would love it if you would start off talking about how you founded your own nonprofit organization, which I think has something to do with your brother Billy, and it's called the Center for Siblings of People with Disabilities.
Yes, exactly. Long name, I know, but we wanted it to be clear. You can't miss what we do from the name. So yeah, I started it definitely because of my experience with my brother, Billy, who has autism. The kind of roots of it go back a pretty long time ago. So when I was in high school, my brother was getting services from a local clinic by us that he was getting, speech therapy and behavioral therapy. And some of the clinicians asked my mom if she knew of any resources for siblings, because they knew, that I was at home and a little older and was very involved with like volunteering and loved to support my brother. And, I would tag along to a lot of his appointments. And they had apparently been getting a lot of requests from parents for support for the brothers and sisters at home. So they, wanted to know if she knew of anything, because they didn't know of anything and she didn't either. But they kind of roped me in and were like, hey, Jessica, you're 16 and we're trying to build a college resume. Would you feel like, joining in with us on some projects for siblings? And I said, of course. And they actually funded a tiny little project for me and a friend to create my first children's book, which was at the time called Special Siblings. It's now been renamed and it's published as Billy's Sister, Life When Your Sibling Has a Disability. It was really just a picture book based on my life growing up with my brother. And it started with me I wrote out kind of what I thought might be relevant from my story. And then I worked with some of the social workers there to make sure that it included some scenes that they thought other kids would resonate with too. So making sure that we talked about anger and frustration and jealousy and some of those tougher feelings that siblings often have, but aren't really given the space to share. So they got me started with that. And it started off as just a family project. And for years, it was just this, small batch, little self-published book. And then a couple years ago, I decided to republish it in a bigger way and make it available on Amazon, just because I saw that there were still no other books like this, which really shocked me. I kind of did a Google search like 5 or 6 years ago and was like, surely someone has done this in a bigger way by now, but I really didn't find anything. So got my book kind of cleaned up and published, and then the nonprofit actually really flowed from there, that the book like immediately overnight got a ton of attention. People were kind of clamoring for this resource. I think once it was available nationally and even internationally, we have people that buy it, all English speaking countries and some not English speaking countries. I can see the sales on Amazon. And people were reaching out wanting to know what other resources they could get for these brothers and sisters at home of kids with disabilities. And I was like, I don't know, guys, I just wrote a book. This is this family project from when I was 16. But I wanted to do more. And so I started a podcast and I started interviewing other. I know you do a lot of podcast work also, and it was a very short-lived podcast, but I did a couple of episodes where I started interviewing other siblings and parents and therapists and trying to find out what is out there so that I could be answering these people's questions and pointing them to more resources. And turned out there still really wasn't that much. So we decided to start our own nonprofits. It was really me and a couple of really avid supporters of the book from my family and my colleagues and a couple of people I met along the way. And yeah, now we've been official for about 2 years. We're working on another book, that this second book is going to be focusing on a girl who has a sister who is medically fragile and in a wheelchair and kind of faces a different set of challenges. So we wanted to portray a more kind of diverse story. And hopefully that'll be coming out next month. We're like fingers crossed in time for the holidays, but otherwise definitely for the new year. So yeah, I'm very busy with that and proud of it, and love, you know, seeing how it really just gets carried forward by all of these involved, passionate people, even when I'm like, you know, kind of being driven forward by all of them. And it's been a really great experience.
What an amazing contribution. I'm on Amazon now. The books are Billy's Sister, My Sibling Story, Special Siblings, are three of the books that are available under Jessica's name, and her last name's about L-E-V-I-N-G. And for example, Billy's, you know, as it says about Billy's Sister, Life When Your Sibling Has a Disability, and it's a project for the Centre for Siblings of People with Disabilities. The book is intended to be read with a parent or a trusted adult, and a great way to spark family discussions. And it explores, you know, how the siblings of kids with disabilities are special too. That is fantastic. So you can find those easily on Amazon. I loved the fact that you did a podcast, the Special Siblings podcast. And there's really great episodes there that are worth listening to. I hope you do continue with it, you know, when a bit further on down the track. But great episodes there, which you can find on Apple Podcast, including coping with COVID, Mark's story, planning for the future, disability, being a family. Look, just please go to the podcast and check episodes for yourself. They're fantastic. I'm going to circle you back even further to back when you were in fifth grade. You started off created a website because kids in your brother's class didn't know what was going on. They didn't understand, and you created a website to help them. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
And when I was in fifth grade, there was this website competition that my school participated in. It was called ThinkQuest, and somewhere on here I have the trophy. I should put it in my office. It was this, you know, kind of group competition where fifth graders were invited, you know, to work with their teachers outside of class time. And we learned how to make a website, and we had to pick a topic and then write all of the content, you know, with our teacher's help, and really learn like soup to nuts all the different steps to getting a website out there. And I was really excited. Like, I thought making a website in general seemed like a cool opportunity. And the first topic that immediately came to my mind was like, oh, this is a great opportunity to teach people about disabilities, and especially about autism, because my brother had just very recently been diagnosed. He was diagnosed with autism when I was 8. And so, you know, fifth grade, you're like 10, you know, so it was still pretty new. And I had been telling people, you know, people would ask about my brother. I would say, oh, he has autism. The language is changing constantly. And we kind of have circled back to this now that, you know, at the time you would say he's autistic. And I remember like constantly at the time, the people would be like, he's artistic. Like, he likes to draw. Like, what do you mean? You know, people just, you know, I'm not that old, but this was, gosh, you know, like 2000, 1998, something like that. And really, it was not diagnosed that frequently. It was not as common as it is today, and nobody knew what I was talking about. And I had noticed also that, you know, my brother was just starting to be at the age where he really was more noticeably different, and his classmates would kind of tease him, or people would ask questions and just really not understand. You know, autism can take different forms in different people. And for my brother, he looks just like anybody else. You know, he doesn't look like he has a disability. And it was just the kind of quirks in his behavior that catch other kids' attention. And kids are not always nice, especially when they don't understand. And so I thought, wow, this website's the perfect opportunity to like educate people about autism and kind of spread the word about what this is, so that people really, you know, can develop some more empathy.
That website told a story, and I think that's when you first discovered the power of stories to get messages across, to create empathy and to create understanding.
Yes, definitely. So I had always loved writing, and I actually had written like fiction stories. I would always be walking around with like notebooks from, you know, if we would ever go to Walgreens or something, I would like beg my parents to get me a little cheap blind notebook, and then I would be writing stories in them constantly. And that was kind of, the website was really the first time that I saw that my writing abilities and interest could make a difference. And, you know, I wrote the section on autism, and obviously my teacher helped me, but, you know, I really wrote most of it. And I was the one that really kind of had the reins and like what to do to lead the story and kind of figure out how to tell the story to other kids. And it was such an impactful experience and definitely changed, really, I think, like the trajectory of my life in some ways, because suddenly I was like, you know, I had thought, oh, maybe I want to be a writer. Like, maybe I want to write novels when I grow up, you know, and that experience made me think, no, maybe I want to use my writing to kind of tell important stories and raise attention for causes that I care about. And I ended up pursuing journalism when I went to college. And I think it really came from that experience. And of course, I'm no longer in journalism. It's morphed into marketing and a lot of nonprofit marketing, but really it's rooted in that same place and same idea.
So take note to the people that are listening. Jessica has been helping spread the word. She's been helping marketing since she was 10. So she's got a few years under her belt now. The name of her company, Sing, and the tagline, let us make it sing. And you can find her under singcreativegroup.com. Fantastic name. Now, of course, when I first heard the name, I think karaoke. I think of my terrible impressions of Joan Jett. I think of singing lessons. But what do you mean by make it sing?
Yeah, so I actually came up with the name while I was biking home one day. And I just was like, for fun, like trying to think of names that would have like a fun tagline and then a fun URL that could go with it that would be related. And so I was running through all these ideas and I kind of came up with like, you've got the story, let us make it sing. And then originally our URL was makeitsing.com, but with a hyphen. And I actually just recently changed it to singcreativegroup.com because the hyphen was throwing everybody off. So I'm still learning marketing lessons even now. But yeah, it was originally kind of, I was just playing this game with myself, trying to think of something that would be sort of catchy and different. And really, you know, the meaning comes from this place of like, you know, I love to write, I love storytelling, but it's hard to come up with something from nothing. You know, my favorite type of projects are when someone's already got a pretty cool story and I'm just making it better. So this idea of making it sing is sort of like, you know, if somebody hands me a rough draft and then I'm going to edit whatever their story is, whether that means literally like I'm, you know, on Microsoft Word making changes, or if I'm, you know, helping them out with their website copy or a video, you know, it can take all different shapes, but I'm kind of taking your raw story that you provide to me in its rough draft form, and I'm going to make those words jump off the page, or I'm going to make the video so compelling that people are going to be drawn in right away, that kind of, I'm going to take that story and I'm going to make it really sing so that it's going to capture people's attention and get you the results that you want.
And you won't even need jazz hands.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask me if I do like music consultancy, and I do not. It's really not. I mean, I love music, definitely a music fan, but I don't currently have any musical clients. So just sort of a little fun thing, but not directly related to the, you know, type of work that I do.
Jess has a team. There's her, and you've got two other amazing women on the team that you work with, right?
Yes, Chris and Amanda. They're awesome.
And in terms of helping with communications, Jessica will help you with find the story, which is brand identity and development, key messaging, telling the story. She's actually got a little microphone as a graphic, which I think is hilarious, which is website mapping, visioning, everything through to media relations, publicity, you know, your social media strategy, and then refining the story, which is, as she alluded to, you know, editing, polishing, proofreading, publishing support, making it sing. You mentioned here ghostwriting, and on your Facebook page, you had a really cute graphic of ghostwriting with an actual ghost. And I'm just going to circle back to Halloween, because you had some photos of you. I think you dressed up in costumes. There was some Halloween madness going on with you, with you and your dog and the cats.
Yes, our entire family. My husband and I both dressed up at, well, I was a witch and he was a warlock, and our dog was a bat dog. And our cats to wear witches' hats, but they, I don't know if you've ever tried to dress up a cat. Some cats are okay with it. Ours are not big fans, but we did our best. We tried, and it was pretty cute while it lasted.
Yeah, the cats look very unimpressed.
Yeah, oh, yeah, always. That's kind of their classic patented face. They're not impressed unless you're giving them food.
Well, we're recording this in November, so Halloween, it's early in November, so Halloween wasn't that long ago. Do your clothes always tell a story?
I don't think so. It's a good question. I probably should work on that as the next step of my brand, you know, making my fashion more reflective of my personality. I think not so much. I think lately during COVID, I've been wearing a lot of sweats and kind of just traipsing around the house in my pajamas. But it's actually been a goal to like get dressed for the workday, even when I'm not going anywhere, because I do believe that that helps you kind of get in the zone. And for sure, I know when I have video calls and I need to kind of dress up for the call, I feel much more focused and together. But no, I would say overall, the story that my clothes probably tell most of the time is like, I guess that I value being comfortable. Maybe that I'm lazy, that it was laundry day, you know, one of those.
Here's to clothes telling stories that are true and authentic and are exactly about where we are, where we want to be. And here's to having our clothes sing. I love that. So back to ghostwriting. What kind of writing would you ghostwrite? Would you ghostwrite my autobiography, or are we talking more about media publication and things like that?
So I have done all kinds. I will say, by and large, it is much more common that I help people with media, you know, type of thing, like you're talking about, like a thought leadership piece. You know, I have several CEOs, especially in nonprofits, because that's, you know, my biggest sort of world right now is the nonprofit world. So I'll write a piece for a CEO. Maybe it's a letter to the editor or an essay that they want to have published in kind of a relevant industry publication. I'll write different, you know, things that people are going to post as their bio, or they're going to post a blog, and, you know, it's more professional ghostwriting for people who, really are very smart, very accomplished people at the top of their field, but writing is not necessarily their strong suit, or they're fine at writing, but, you know, they can afford to make sure that they are going to sound really polished and really amazing, and they want to bring in some help. But I actually have a novel that I'm working on for someone right now, and I have helped with children's books and really across the gamut. I think probably the only type of thing I have not ever helped with ghostwriting is like poetry. I think everything else I've probably taken a stab at least once.
I never want to try editing poetry. It's just too subjective. Mm-hmm. I've critiqued many of my friends' novels and self-published books. I love critiquing. I love making something better. It sounds like we've both got that Clifton strength of maximizing, wanting things to be even better. And your journalism background must really come in handy with things like letters to the editor. Do you remember being taught the upside down pyramid, how you needed to make sure the most important information was in the top, and then you could start scaling back to the least important? Because if they ran out of room, you knew damn well your story was going to get chopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you're talking about. That was one of our first lessons in journalism school. And I think about that all the time, because I do a lot of PR work now for clients also. And I'm sort of like, I write press releases for people and I'm pitching them to the media. And I feel like having worked as a journalist is my number one superpower in that area, because I know how journalists think. And it is, some of it is kind of a formula, and people who haven't really, you know, learned about the upside down triangle or don't know like the different types of stories that are always going to be newsworthy, you know, they're kind of shooting in the dark. Whereas it's actually a formula. Like, it's very easy to learn what some of these key things are that journalists are looking for, and then, you know, add on top just a little bit of like that je ne sais quoi of like getting inside their brains. But a lot of the basics of journalism are, like you said, just, you know, get all that information in the top and make it interesting, make it compelling, make it timely, has to be relevant. Think about your audience. You know, there are just some key things that I think all journalists are looking for when they're putting together a story. And it's much easier for me to just jump into that part of my brain since I spent several years of my life in that place.
Well, it is a zone of genius, you know, and to be able to delegate that to somebody, if writing isn't your forte, do delegate it to somebody else. Sometimes it's a lot easier to edit than it is to create. So just get words on a page and pass it on to someone who can make sense out of it. And never underestimate the power of white space. So I think it's always great to have a couple of PR articles that are fairly evergreen on hand, because you never know when a newspaper or a magazine or a blog, suddenly their article goes missing or isn't appropriate anymore, and they need to fill space. Mm-hmm. So when people like you are a gift, because you know, nobody wants white space or blank space in their publication.
Right. And it's also, you know, I was just actually on a different podcast a couple of weeks ago talking like solely about media relations, and we were really focusing on nonprofits. And it's just whether you're a nonprofit or not, it's really sometimes opportunities pop up. And like, if you don't have a huge budget for publicity to, you know, you can't pay for ads. Well, media is a great way to get free publicity, especially if kind of your topic pops up. And so, you know, I gave the example of like, you know, when Simone Biles dropped out or, you know, pulled out of the one program during the Olympics, suddenly like mental health was really in the spotlight, and, you know, sexual abuse was in the spotlight, and there were all of these issues that, and, you know, sports, athleticism, like if you had a nonprofit or really any business in that space, like you immediately had a really good chance of getting in the media at that moment, because every magazine, every blogger, everyone was trying to put out an article with an interesting perspective on the situation. And, you know, the people who have PR teams or publicists or that are kind of ready to jump when those types of things happen can have, like you said, your sort of go-to press release handy to say, oh, mental health is in the media. Here's how we contribute to mental health. Here's what our experts have to say about that, you know, and it gives you this immediate shot that you might not have had the rest of the year. And you're only going to get it if you were prepared, because, you know, the flip side of that is that a week later, it wasn't in the news anymore. You know, the cycle moves really quickly. Mm. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
Having content created and ready to go, and also content that can be pivoted or repositioned. Have you ever worked with Help a Reporter Out?
Yes, I love them. I look at it every day. I actually have one service that I offer, which is just monitoring of Help a Reporter Out and a couple other similar digests that I'm on. It is the best. I have definitely gotten many people into publications just from using that service. It's awesome.
You have to be really on top of it. And obviously you are, Jessica, obviously is. HelpAReporter.com is basically Haro, as it's known, as connects journalists seeking expertise to include in their content with sources who have that expertise. But you do have to be onto it. And it would make your life a lot simpler if you hired somebody who can do your media and PR for you. Hint, hint. because the approach, you know, Jessica's approach to with the Sing Creative Group to PR is find the story, find the audience, and then make connection. Because, of course, it is matchmaking, isn't it? There's no point in pitching a story to the wrong audience.
100%. And that's what I tell people, you know, whenever I am working with someone and we're doing sort of a deep dive into their PR, thinking about publicity, everyone says, well, I just want to be in the news, or I just want to be on TV. And it's like, well, we have to really think about where it would be appropriate for you to be and where it's going to be helpful for you to be. Because if you're like a local, you know, nail salon or something, or if you've got an online business, those are two different audiences. Like, one of you is going to be super thrilled to be in your local news, and it's going to actually be really, really helpful. Like if your kind of community digest puts out an amazing review of your nail salon, that's going to be great. Whereas USA Today, like, first of all, what's your nail salon going to be in USA Today for? Like, hopefully it's something good, because otherwise, like, it's hard to actually think of what's newsworthy for a local nail salon to be in a national publication for. And it's also probably not going to help you, because all these readers throughout the country are not going to come travel to your nail salon unless you've got some like really incredible special service. Whereas if you have like an online goods business, you know, you definitely want to be in those national publications, and it's kind of a waste of your time to be in little community publications where the audience is so small and who knows if what you're selling is going to be relevant to them. So, you know, from the client side, you really want to think about what's going to be the most bang for your buck or worth your time to pitch. And then that's equally true from the reporter side, that if you kind of inappropriately pitch something that's just not a good fit for that venue or that publication, the reporter's going to delete your email. It's not going to be a good fit for them, and they're not going to be interested. And you're going to lose that relationship too. Like if something did come up later that was a better fit, they're not going to take you seriously, because they're going to be like, oh, it's those people that kind of spammed me last time. So really making a match and having like genuine, authentic relationships with media that, you know, they, like you said before, they've got white space. They need to fill it. Like you're helping them as much as they're helping you if you do it right. You're trying to make that match between people who have a story to be told and people who actually really want to tell your story because it's such a good fit for their publication.
Don't burn bridges. I love that. You definitely don't spam. We've all been on the other side of spam. And unless somebody really is speaking to what you need and want, that delete button is really easy to push. And don't underestimate the power of a niche. Much better to have a very small publication that's exactly your target audience than it is to cast a broader net and miss the boat entirely, right?
100%. Yeah. And, you know, the only other time, like I do tell people, sometimes it's useful to be in a national publication, even when you're local, because it gives you credibility. So, you know, for, you mentioned Help Reporter Out, like a lot of times with that, they'll be looking for an expert source. So like, you know, they'll be looking maybe for a comment from a licensed psychologist. And that's one where, okay, for a licensed psychologist who works in Chicago to comment on a national article, probably not going to immediately get them business, but it does make them look really credible. So to have on their website that they were just in a national publication being the expert commenting on, you know, anxiety or whatever, now you're going to look at their website and be like, oh my gosh, you must really be qualified to help me with my anxiety because you were in USA Today, which is a real story. I just got a therapist in USA Today, so it was very exciting.
Congratulations. That's a really big deal.
Thank you. Yeah, it was super. And it was from Help a Reporter Out. So that is a perfect way, you know, to kind of get in, you know, with a sort of different angle. And that's a little bit of a different approach than the having a press release and trying to really get a specific story out. The like being on call as an expert is another way that you can get some publicity for a different reason.
And it absolutely adds to your credibility and the know, like, and trust factor, your authority. It's very impressive when you jump on a website and they say, as seen in, mm-hmm. as worked with. And if you jump on syncreativegroup.com, there's a ton of very impressive logos up there, by the way.
Thank you.
You mentioned anxiety. Would you tell us a little bit about LEAP, L-E-A-P, the LEAP Center for Anxiety?
Sure. Yeah. So that is the client that I got into USA Today. And I will be transparent and say the lead psychologist there is my husband. So they are one of my near and dear clients that get a steep family discount. But yeah, so it's been actually super because I get to test things out. And my husband launched his own therapy practice just this past April. And so I was able to help him a ton with doing his marketing strategy and his PR strategy, his social media, and really getting him ready to launch. So it's been very exciting and really exciting, of course, to see that success too, because getting him in USA Today was like super excited. I was like so excited professionally and then also like, oh my God, my husband's in USA Today. So it was personally very gratifying too.
It's a huge success, though. Harkening back to your cats and dog, I can't see the cats being impressed with that either.
Probably not, no.
Cat. You work on video projects. Would you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, I love video. So I've always, you know, the core of what I do is really storytelling. I started off as a writer, and I think my journey has been like, okay, from writing to journalism to marketing to, you know, there's like this kind of different trajectories. But the core of it is all really in the story. And I think video has just emerged as this really powerful way to tell stories. And something that used to be like, go to the movie theater and sit down and watch a story. Now it's like, it's so easy to take a video on your phone and post it. You know, you edit it in iMovie and suddenly you've got this really powerful video on your website that tells people what you do in 30 seconds. And so I love working with people to put their story into video, whether that's like a fundraising video for a nonprofit or a social media clip to get, you know, people engaged, really tell the story of what you do. It's also even really easy to make animated videos now. I love Canva. You know, there's so many free tools out there that you used to have to like hire a videographer and hire an animator. And I have done both of those things. Like, you know, with some of the larger nonprofits I've worked for in the past, we had a full video team and like an in-house animator and all this stuff. And now, you know, certainly, I'm not gonna lie, if you can afford it, like you're definitely gonna get better quality if you hire a professional. But you can make something pretty good on Canva and with your phone. And it's just such a powerful tool that I recommend to everybody.
Oh, I love Canva. What Jessica is talking about is canva.com, and that's canva.com. And they have a free version and a paid version. The paid version's ridiculously cheap. I think it's about $7 a month. And they will help you design presentations, social media, video, print products, marketing, office. They've got GIFs or GIFs, however you pronounce it. And I'm not a designer, and even I can put something together thanks to their templates. So yeah, Canva is definitely a go-to. It's a software tool I use very, very regularly. Speaking of articles you wrote, I think this was for the Wilson Quarterly, I believe global climate change is important to you.
Yes, very important. And, you know, actually one of the, I was just talking to Amanda, who's on my team, about, you know, one of the reasons I really wanted to start my company is because there are so many causes that I'm so passionate about. And I, you know, I used to work at different nonprofits as an in-house communications staff, and that was awesome. But like, even then I was like, on the side, you know, like, but what about this cause that's really important too? And so something that I love about what I'm doing now is that I can really dabble in like all the causes that are important to me. And climate change is definitely a huge one. I think it's kind of core to everything, you know, like hunger is important, but you know, if the world explodes because of climate change, then it won't have mattered, you know? So it's really like pretty important and feels very urgent. So yeah, the article that you're referencing was actually a very neat experience for me because I got to go back and interview someone who I had met when I was in college. And I actually interviewed him in college for our school alumni paper, which I worked for at the time. And he was an international student at Boston University, where we both were. I was a, you know, lowly undergrad, and he was like, I think actually getting his doctorate. And he was originally from Peru and had this incredible story of this sort of rainforest hometown that had been this paradise in the middle of the rainforest. And then climate change was really causing problems there, and it was flooding, and they were having forest fires and just all of these, you know, terrible things that were making it really difficult for people to live there. And he was trying to get Boston University students to go back with him on winter break and help him rebuild some of the things that had been destroyed. And that's kind of, you know, where I left it 15, 13 years ago, whatever. And then I saw that the Wilson Quarterly was doing this series on displacement and climate change, and was able to work with them to sort of check in on him and learn about all the amazing stuff that's been going on with this same amazing guy in his hometown, and like the really renaissance they've been able to do there, but like continuously getting thwarted by climate change. And it's this story that is like both so incredible and inspiring that they like do not give up. The people there are trying so hard to rebuild over and over. And then it's also a little depressing because like everything they try, there's climate change again, making it even more difficult.
Again, another example of Jessica bringing us a story. If you go to wilsonquarterly.com, first came the floods, one Peruvian town refusal to give up in the face of climate change. That you really brought that to life and enable us to actually be part of that experience. Jessica offers, if you go to Sing Creative, I am glad you dropped the hyphen with the maker. That would have driven me crazy trying to work especially on my phone with my thumbs. But syncreativegroup.com, 15-minute free consultations, right? People can send you flick you an email. You'll get in touch with them, but you're also offering really fast and quick and strategic 15-minute consults.
Absolutely, yeah, and you can book that directly with me on Calendly. You can just click the link from the website and put time right on my calendar. And yeah, I love certainly emails and Facebook messages. Like, I'll take your communication any way people want to send it, but I love actually getting to talk to people. And it's just a much quicker way, I think, to dive in and, you know, offer any help that I can on the fly if possible. Otherwise, discuss if we're a good fit to work together further.
So if you want to make your story sing, your personal stories, your business stories, your nonprofit stories, your entrepreneurial stories sing, get hold of syncreativegroup.com, Jessica Living Siegel. You can find her on LinkedIn as well. Jessica, thank you so much. What a joy.
I really appreciate your time today. Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. And you definitely did your research. You asked great questions. So thank you for making it so easy. I didn't have to prepare a thing.
Thank you. You know what? I am a pretty damn good journalist.
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that.
Have a lovely rest of your day. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.